Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun, too. It's a thing, and now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino-style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere, and each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey there, fellow travelers. Welcome to the Tolkien Road, episode 316. Greta, anything strange or startling since the last time we spoke on the podcast?
Strange or startling? Oh, yeah, we told you about those, like, lights we saw reflected in the sky when we were up in Nashville for Brain Extreme Listen yesterday.
Oh, the UFOs.
Yeah, UFOs.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I think we realized that they were actually just headlights.
Mm.
But it was still cool. But it was startling.
Wait, so it was
first.
A flying car? They were headlights on a flying car?
I know.
Is that what they were?
No, I think it was just the light from the headlights in the sky. But the way they were moving, it looked like kind of orbish, UFO-ish, maybe. So that was, yeah. But now let me ask you, anything strange or startling?
No, nothing interesting ever happens to me.
Oh, that's too bad.
You're the one that has the adventures.
The adventures.
Yes.
I guess that is true.
I'm more like one of the Proudfoots, just like working away, you know, nothing. You're more like Bilbo going off gallivanting on adventures.
Do.
In this episode, we will be looking back on the Rings of Power Season 1, and most importantly, discussing some of the in-depth mail we've received about the Rings of Power and about our reactions to the Rings of Power. So it's a mailbag episode, right? So Rings of Power, mailbag episode in effect. We've gotten a lot of really good feedback, you know, so much on our YouTube channel. I try to respond to that, you know, a lot of that fairly quickly. But then we've gotten some more in-depth, longer reactions, some of which have been, somewhat critical of us, like, you know, kindly. And I can handle the kind criticism being like, hey, you know, this is what I think about your reaction, as long as you keep it cool, right?
Yeah.
Like, we're all Tolkien fans, right? You know, so anyway, we're going to get to some of that. So,
cool.
Right. You know, we'll see how much we get to, and, you know, hopefully we get to a good bit. Before we get started, we'd like to give a double up air five to our patrons. 3, 2, 1, whoopsht. Nice.
Very nice.
Special thanks to this episode's executive producers, John R., Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien, Jacob Lockham, John H., Scotchy Bobo, and Eru27.
Thank you, guys.
And a shout out to our newest patron, Alaskan Moose 31.
Cool name.
Not to be confused with Alaskan Moose 30. Yes.
Or 32.
Or 32.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or 21 for that matter. Mm-hmm. So,
Yeah. Awesome. Well, welcome and thank you.
Thank you. Yes, very much. Mm-hmm. Appreciate you. Become a patron by visiting patreon.com/Tolkien Road. Your financial support helps the Tolkien Road to keep on evering on and land you some cool perks along the way. Learn more at patreon.com/Tolkien Road. YouTube, hit that like button. Don't forget to subscribe and let us know what's on your mind in the comments below. Okay, so I wanted to, before we dive right into the feedback, I wanted to frame all of this because we're going to be talking about the Rings of Power. We're past season one now. We've obviously given our, you know, reaction to season one, you know, shared a lot of thoughts on that. And I wanted to frame this all because, you know, it all really comes back for me to Tolkien and like his mindset, how he would have viewed these sorts of adaptations. We don't have him here to tell us, but we do have official record of things that he said in regards to his own, like, storytelling ideas, right? His own storytelling theory, and also some bits of reaction to proposed film adaptations of his stories. So we can get an idea of how he responded, how he viewed adaptations through those things. So what I want to quote from here is from letter 201. I don't know if I've ever read this paragraph in its entirety on the show, but this is where I get my whole hang up about the timeline compression from. So letter 201, written in 1957 to Rainer Unwin. You will receive on Monday the copy of the storyline or synopsis of the proposed film version of The Lord of the Rings. I could not get it off yesterday. An abridgment by selection with some good picture work would be pleasant and perhaps worth a good deal in publicity. But the present script is rather a compression with resultant overcrowding and confusion, blurring of climaxes, and general degradation. A pullback towards more conventional fairy stories. People gallop about on eagles at the least provocation. Lorien becomes a fairy castle with delicate minarets and all that sort of thing. Hmm. Yeah. So,
I did not realize that he was working on a film version of The Lord of the Rings, or that was even like a possibility back then.
Oh yeah, yeah. There were people that were interested in in obtaining the rights to The Lord of the Rings. I mean, almost, within a very short period of time after it was published. You can kind of imagine that they certainly wouldn't have been able to pull off something on the scale of, say, of Peter Jackson's films, right?
Right.
And I'm, for one, I'm personally, I'm very happy that this didn't happen in the 50s, because I think it would have, I don't know that we would have ever gotten Peter Jackson's films if something like this had been attempted in the 50s. Mm-hmm. I just don't think anybody could have pulled it off and stayed true. I think it would have been a complete disaster. But anyway, it's important, I think, to understand that Tolkien at least wasn't, and of course, Tolkien is writing this in the 1950s. So he's thinking in terms of, he doesn't know all of the innovations that will come in film. He was not a filmmaker, not a film expert, as far as, not really even like someone who paid a lot of attention to film, as far as we know. He was looking at this more of like, well, maybe it'll help promote the book, right? Mm-hmm. But he wasn't uncritical, right? And he wasn't like, sure, you can take the rights and guess I'll cash in and, do whatever you want with it. He had a specific reaction to reading this script. Now, I have not read the script. I don't have this, proposed, I don't have this treatment in front of me. I don't even know if it exists out there for anybody to read at this point. But what he says is he's okay with an abridgment, but what he reads is a compression with overcrowding, confusion, blurring of climaxes, and general degradation, right? And I think it's important to understand what the difference between an abridgment and what he is otherwise describing here. An abridgment would be, in all honesty, an abridgment is what I see in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings films, right? Tom Bombadil is left out. Mm-hmm. They don't take Tom Bombadil and turn him into something else, right? Or try to like compress the Tom Bombadil, thing in weird ways, right? They abridge, right? They abridge the story. They say, okay, we don't necessarily need to have this section in the movie, right? We're not saying it didn't happen. We're just saying like it doesn't necessarily need to be a part of our adaptation of the story. Yeah. So they just don't even deal with it. And Tolkien seems to be fine with that approach, right? He seems to realize that like this thing's my story is a beast, right? It would probably be really hard to tell this story in a film. Mm-hmm. And this was not the age of like, let's make three-hour films, right? This was the age of like, make one film, 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours max. I think maybe there were some more epic films at that time, but this was like, we were not there yet. We were not to the age of like telling these massive, trilogies of films. So his criticisms though, let's pay attention to what he says. A compression that results in overcrowding and confusion, blurring of climaxes, and general degradation. I read those things, and like to me, that's exactly what The Rings of Power was, And it's because of the timeline compression, right? Overcrowding and confusion. you're just trying to fit way too much in, you know, to certain scenes, right? You're putting Celebrimbor in the same time as Elendil and Miriel and Farazone, right? When in the actual timeline, they existed 1,500 years apart from each other, right? Celebrimbor had died 1,500 years before Miriel and Elendil, right, were even born. Confusion about various things, blurring of climaxes, right? So, you know, you can go through and you can kind of list off all of the things that fall under these categories because of the compression approach that was taken, and just that general degradation. You know, I love his noting people gallop about on eagles at the least provocation. It's like, oh, need to go from Numenor to what will soon be Mordor. No problem. We can make that happen in a snap, right? In this age of sail, right? So, you know, we see Tolkien kind of framing his concerns about adaptations right here, and that's a good one to understand how he would have approached these things.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
All this being said, you don't have to care. Like, you know, nobody has to care what Tolkien would think about this. If your mindset of this is, if your mindset with all of this is, I just don't, like, I don't really care that much about what Tolkien would have thought. I mean, I'm not going to say I don't have a problem with that, but you're free to have your own opinion of it. But at the end of the day, for me, the reason I care so much is because Tolkien was the one who gave us this thing in the first place, gave us the entirety, right, of Middle Earth all by himself. It came from his imagination, his genius. And therefore, I think in order to realize the best possible adaptation, you have to pay attention to what he would have thought. So I want to deal. So we're going to go through and deal with some of the feedback that you all gave there. Some shorter ones that maybe agree with us more, and then some longer ones that, you know, I really appreciate and offer, I'd say, the counter perspective to everything I've laid out here. And we'll discuss those reactions, and, you know, see if we can find something to agree with in them. So yeah. All right.
That's good.
All right, so our first note is a shorter one from Parker. Parker is probably more on our side of things. Parker on YouTube, in response to our episode 2 reaction, said, "It seems to be less a timeline compression and more a timeline hodgepodge of knots and contradictions. With Tolkien's tight-knit parameters that establish strict coherence and verisimilitude, such careless omissions, conflations, and embellishments will no doubt cause grievous problems and errors that don't exist already to proliferate exponentially as the show progresses." I think Parker said very eloquently, basically what Tolkien was saying in that quote, right? It's like, you know, careless omissions, conflations, embellishments with no doubt cause grievous problems and errors. And I think those things were realized. So Parker, I think, kind of gets where we're coming from, where Tolkien was coming from, you know, when it comes to this adaptation. The next note is from Olaf. So Olaf, this one actually goes back to June. So this is before anything had come out as far as the actual episodes. All we had was marketing material at this point. I want to say Olaf wrote a very long note and very thoughtful note, and I'm not sure what Olaf would think now, right? If going back and watching. So Olaf, if you're listening, love to hear your thoughts now that we're through season one. But I'm gonna go back, and because I've been talking a lot about like how I just expected this not to be any good because of the whole timeline compression thing that they were already saying was going to happen. So, all right, let's read a little bit of Olaf's note here. thanks for bringing my attention to your video. It was fun to watch and listen to The Tolkien Road again. In Sweden, there's only one Tolkien podcast with episodes released on a monthly basis, and your podcast was one of the first American podcasts that I discovered when searching for more Tolkien-related audio content to quench that ever-growing thirst after scholarly insights and lore wisdom. Now I listen to several Tolkien-themed podcasts on a regular basis, but sadly enough, I kind of lost yours along the way, although it's not impossible that I will pick it up again. Well, hopefully you picked it up again. And shout out to all of our Sweden audience, because I know there's quite a few of you all out there. So anyway, back to the matter at hand. You provide very insightful comments throughout the video and also present compelling arguments to support your case. You most certainly do know your Tolkien. I guess that the difference between our approaches to the show is that you primarily are looking at it from a Tolkienite and lore-centric perspective, whereas I'm more concerned about the showrunner's vision and how to tell the story in a way that will be comprehensible to casual viewers. However lore accurate the approach is, I'm not convinced that the timeline should be preserved as it is, i.e. I don't believe in time jumps and too many mortals dying off between seasons. Viewers who are familiar with the Legendarium would of course understand and maybe even appreciate such an approach, but I think that it is important to remember that a very large chunk of the show's audience won't be book fans. Of course, we can't know anything for certain, but I suspect that seasons taking place several hundred years apart and with large parts of the cast replaced between each one can be confusing for them, no matter how carefully the writers try to explain it. Therefore, if there is a way to tell the story in the simplest way possible, from point A to point B in a straight line without cast members suddenly disappearing, I believe that is the way they should do it. So let me pause there, and he's got more, I mean, Greta, what do you think of that? So you've been a little bit quiet so far.
Yeah, no, I think he has a fair point. I think that's kind of been something I've been talking about too on, you know, in various episodes is the audience. Like, that's who they need to figure out who is their audience for this show. And I'll be honest, after season one, I still don't know. Like, yeah. I don't know. I do understand what he's saying, and I'm, you know, being not the Tolkien, you know, like not being quite as schooled in Tolkien as you are. I think I have a little bit of that maybe different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
But even so, I didn't enjoy the show. So, you know, I don't have a problem with what he's saying there. I think there are some considerations that should be made as far as people being able to follow it and, you know, whatever, but it still needs to keep people engaged. So it's a delicate balance.
Yeah. And I do get, some of Olaf's concerns here. You know, massive time jumps, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
My response to those things is, A, then be careful what story you choose to tell, right? Because, or how long you choose to tell. And so, you know, I had talked about time jumps as one possibility. I think better approach, and this is what I outlined in a recent video I did on how I would have done it after watching season one, right? I think a better approach would have been to tell the story that happens at the end of the Second Age, right? Which is concerned with that last Numenorean generation, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then use flashbacks to tell other aspects of the story.
You're talking about Akalabeth. Is that basically what you're saying?
Like, yeah.
Tell the story of Akalabeth.
And I mean, that's what they're trying to do here. They're trying to tell the story of Akalabeth and of the Rings of Power in the Third Age, right?
Well, what are you saying they should have done?
I'm saying they should have told the story. No, because Akalabeth starts at the beginning of the Second Age.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
I'm saying tell the end of Akalabeth,
gotcha.
Right?
Okay. Yeah.
Which is about half of Akalabeth anyway, right?
Yeah.
It's that last concerned with that last generation, Elendil, Muriel, Pharazôn, Isildur, right? Still takes place over a couple hundred years, but what I outlined is like that's your kind of main story, and then you use flashbacks to tell of the things that led to that point, right? That kind of led up to that, you know, to the fall of Numenor and then the last alliance of men and elves, right? And other shows have done that. Very successful shows have done those kinds of approaches with things. Now, they weren't necessarily telling stories of 3,500 years, but the one I always point to is Lost, right? But even the other night, we were watching Breaking Bad, and man, there's, I just keep coming back. It is the funniest thing to me that I keep coming back to Breaking Bad and saying like, this is how, you know, we should be telling long form Tolkien storytelling, Middle Earth storytelling, because obviously Breaking Bad is a very different type of story from anything Lord of the Rings related, but it's also a very masterfully told, story, right? Mm-hmm. And I include Better Call Saul in that, but the episode we were watching the other night is the story of so basically it flashes back at the end of the episode for about 15 minutes. They do a 15 minute flashback to one of the main characters on Breaking Bad and kind of show how he became what led to him being the way he is in the present, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just masterfully done. And you see other characters when they were younger, mm-hmm. and their interactions, and you understand, like, oh, now I really understand where he's coming from, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. like how he became the way he is, what is motivating him at root, right? And you're like, I remember looking at you and being like, you know, why couldn't Rings of Power have done something like why couldn't they have done it this way? Mm-hmm. So anyway. I like the flashback approach. I think mm-hmm. the flashback approach would have worked really well. But at the end of the day, it's like if you have to mangle the story that you are that you're setting out to tell, then why can't you, there were so many different options for stories they could have told, and that's I think my biggest problem here, especially mm-hmm. knowing Tolkien's own perspective. He goes on to say, I do, however, think that telling certain aspects of the story through flashbacks would have been a perfectly viable narrative device, and that you make a strong case for it in your video. We now know that the story will start approximately at Second Age 1500, so there's certainly a place for flashbacks, both to earlier stages of the Second Age and to the First Age. I suspect that flashbacks will be an important device in order to set up the Numenorians' envy of and animosity to the elves. Yeah, so, you know, this was, again, Olaf talking in June, and so, you know, I think Olaf kind of sees my point that I'm making now, right? Like that flashbacks maybe would have worked a little bit better. They really underused flashbacks. The only mm-hmm. flashbacks we had was really at the very beginning of the first episode. Mm-hmm. After listening to a few of the content creators that went to meet the showrunners at the Oxford event in May, it has become clear to me that both J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay are Tolkien enthusiasts in their own right, and that they seem to be very well versed in the legendarium. Citing from Tolkien's Letters on the Fly, for example. As such, they are most certainly aware of which themes and life motives that are central to the Second Age and how to convey them to the audience. As screenwriters, they would also be familiar with different forms of narrative devices such as flashbacks and parallel timelines, but opted to go for the compressed timeline instead, probably because their vision required the story to be told in such a way to do it justice. Their vision may not be true to Tolkien in the sense that the timeline is kept intact, but it might be faithful to the legendarium in numerous other ways. Whether the compressed timeline is a deal breaker or not is down to one's personal preferences or principles, I guess. I don't have a problem with it, at least not until I can see how it plays out. I do, however, understand this is way more important to you, and I respect that. So, Olaf, I really appreciate and respect your mm-hmm. feedback and taking the time to write such a thorough and thoughtful letter. In regards to Payne and McKay and their, you know, being Tolkien enthusiasts, I don't question that they're Tolkien enthusiasts. No. Even at this point, I don't question that they're Tolkien enthusiasts. Honestly, if I had to give a take on it, I would say that these are two guys who really love Tolkien and wanted to make something that would honor Tolkien. I just don't know that they executed it particularly well. And I don't want to get like conspiratorial here or anything like that, but I just really like. My best guess is that even if they tried to do it, they might have tried to take this in a different way, in a different direction, and were told, you know, by the head office, like, no, you will do it a certain way, right? Mm-hmm. Because at the end of the day, they're working for this massive corporation called exactly. Amazon, right?
Yep. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. We don't know who they're beholden to. We have an idea, right? But they have, you know, it's not their money they're spending, right? So
yeah, and I look at, you know, one thing that occurred to me in watching this first season is that Peter Jackson was able to be much more successful with the Lord of the Rings adaptation, A, because he's working from material that's much more detailed in the first place.
True.
He wasn't just working with a timeline, essentially. Yeah. But also, Peter Jackson, and I've kind of tried to explain this to you, much more of a visionary who already had a track record established for himself. Yeah. it was his pet project, right? Everything I understand about the Peter Jackson films was, it was like, I'm going to do this, right? And he went out and made it happen. And yes, he was beholden to people, but there was a sense in which this was like, this is my project and no one else is going to step in and do it. Whereas Payne and McKay, in the back of their minds, they're like, we can be replaced at any time, right?
Yeah. No, that's fair. That's fair. You know, yeah.
So anyway, well, Olaf, thank you. I really appreciate your thoughts. And I am genuinely curious to know what you think now that season one is wrapped.
Yeah, me too.
All right. Next comment is a shorter one from Halfwit on YouTube. YouTube names are always the funniest.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Halfwit. Yeah, here we go. This is in response to my how I would have done it video. I was thinking about each season being a standalone story. For example, season one would be about Elros and Elrond in the beginning of Numenor. Season two, the growth of Numenor. Season three, about the split between the king's men and the faithful. Season four, about Elendil and his sons building Arnor and Gondor. Season five, about the last alliance of elves and men. But I think your idea is better. It would flow together better for a TV show. Yeah, and I've thought about the approach that you kind of outlined there with the, you know, each season covers a different epic of the series, and I think that could have worked. I don't know if it would have been I think Olaf's points about killing off a lot of characters every season, big time jumps, that could be a little bit discombobulating to people. So that's why I think the flashback approach, you know, focusing on the last generation of Numenor for the majority of the show, and then using flashbacks abundantly to relate events that had happened in the past and to expand our knowledge of characters and what motivates them. But I'm not saying that this approach couldn't have worked either, right? The, you know, season one, Elros and Elrond, right? Because you still have Elrond going forward, right? You still have Galadriel going forward. You still have Gil-galad going forward. But it would be interesting to see Elros, right? And his brother Elrond and his brother Elros, you know, parting ways, you know, one choosing elfdom, one choosing being a man and the fate of men, and then Elrond having to deal with his brother's death, right? Mm-hmm. For example. Mm-hmm. So,
no, I think just in general, I think flashbacks are just totally underutilized in both film and books. Like, I think they could be way more used than they are. I mean, I'm almost done with a novel where the middle part of the book is basically just one long flashback, and it's brilliantly done. I mean, it makes you, like, it's just a great way to develop characters and to give you perspective on the current, you know, the current state of things. And I love it. I love flashbacks.
it's weird. We're like becoming like, you know, flashback. You know, super fans or something like that, like, which is like a totally nerdy thing to do. But the more I think about it, like, let's just nerd out on that a bit, right?
Yeah.
Why do we love flashbacks so much? I think we love flashbacks because there's something highly contemplative about them, right? Mm-hmm. We flashback in our own lives, right? Like when you have a quiet moment, your mind tends to go back to something you've experienced in the past, right? Mm-hmm. And to thinking about reflecting on different times of past. When I write songs, I'm often thinking about something, like I will go back to something that I experienced at one point, and I'll incorporate that into my song. And to me, it makes the song more powerful, right? Mm-hmm. I can't think of a time when I'm like, boy, that flashback sucked. And like when I'm watching something, or, you know, it's usually like, oh, that was really well done. You know, that really helps me understand more deeply what's going on here. And again, I come back to the idea that, like, Tolkien actually used this in Lord of the Rings. And he used it not in the sense of like he's going to go back and he's going to like have a flashback chapter, but he used it within the context of people relating past events to one another. Mm-hmm. A shadow of the past. That chapter is like almost entirely a flashback, right? Or flashbacks. Right, it's Gandalf telling things to Frodo, right, that have happened in the past. Council of Elrond, all these people sitting around talking about events from the past that some of them experienced, right?
Or Aragorn, right? Like, didn't he tell the story of Beren and Lúthien?
Exactly, right? And it and it creates this sense of depth, right? Mm-hmm. It creates it does. This sense this really and it does. It slows it changes the pace, mm-hmm. right? It makes us go deeper and to think more deeply about what we're seeing in the present.
It also broadens your perspective.
Yeah,
like it really helps you. It's almost like an eagle eye view, right? Where you're like kind of watching and being like, oh, so that's why this is happening now. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Like I was just thinking about it. Like just this morning, our 18-year-old sent a picture to our family group chat.
Yeah.
And here I'm thinking it's going to be like some picture of her, like, you know, being cool at college or whatever. But instead, it's like a family picture. Like the five of us,
yeah.
From when she's like five, and the other kids are like three, or not even younger, probably. They're probably like 1, 2, and 4 or something. And it's just like, I wonder what, you know, like what, you know, so it would have been probably a 15, 14-year-old picture, right? Yeah. And I'm like, it just got me thinking, like first thinking about, oh man, like, you know, mm-hmm. like just remembering those years, and then also kind of wondering about her and like, what was she, you know, like she was clearly looking at old pictures and what was it that what kind of brought her back and what made her want to share this picture or this memory? And mm-hmm. I think it's it just shapes who we are. Right.
Yeah.
And it's it's just a great way to kind of, like you said, like go deeper and broader.
I mean, like seriously, I could nerd out on this.
Yeah. Clearly, I
method
could
of storytelling for a while. There really is something. I think about the one that keeps popping into my mind is, I think it's at the end of Godfather Part 2, which actually Godfather Part 2 is uses flashbacks abundantly. It actually is like kind of like a double layered story. Have you seen Godfather Part 2?
I don't think I have. I think I've only seen the first one.
Yeah. So Godfather Part 2 is it tells the story of like it continues the story that starts in Godfather Part 1, but then it also tells the story of Vito Corleone when he was younger and still in Sicily, and then he comes to the U.S. and so you get all this backstory on him, right? And man, it is just like beautifully done, right? And you see all these parallels going on, right, between the present and the past.
Yeah.
And then there's a really beautiful scene. I think it's at the end of the second one where like all of the family, when they're grown and adults, are like, I think they're gathering for like a family meal or something like that. And by this point, a lot of them are dead, right? Many of them are dead, and there's been all this ugliness and all these kinds of things, but it's like going back to a moment when they were all kind of like young adults and happy together. Right, and it's devastating.
Yeah,
I mean it's like beautiful at one point, and then devastating on the other hand, right? Because you're like, they had that at one point, mm-hmm. and now it's all gone, right? So, yeah, I get it. That probably the executives sitting in the room are like, oh, people would find that boring, you know, like, you know. But I'm like, that's what Tolkien was told about his stories. All these years, right? Like, and he thought himself, like, but he kept pressing on. He kept pressing on. Why would people ever read this, right? This 1,000-page, like, you know, fantasy story, right? Why would people ever read this? And all the critics still naysay it. And now it's the most popular book in the world, or at least English-speaking world, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm just like, you sign up for the Tolkien thing, you do it the Tolkien way, right? You do it the Tolkien way, so... All right, let's move on to another longer note. I think this is a longer one. So, let's see. This is from Malcolm. Dear John and Greta, I'm joined the podcast, regular episodes, and the Rings of Power recaps. There are two resources that might be worth discussing regarding the challenges of film adaptations of books. I'm sorry. Let me come back to this one. I skipped over one accidentally. All right. This is from O-Dog.
Oh, dog.
Okay. This was left on the blog in response to our review of episode 7. All right. Even Oh, yeah. Okay. I've been a listener for a while, but this is the first time I've decided to comment on an episode. Now, obviously, I'm not going to say anything that you haven't heard already regarding complaints about your opinion of the Rings of Power. I'm one of those people who is relatively enjoying the show, but I'm not here to enforce my opinion onto someone who has different views than me, especially someone who is much more knowledgeable than me. That's something I respect about this podcast. Your extensive knowledge of all things Tolkien is impressive, and I hope to achieve such a level one day myself. Your loyalty to the professor is also commendable, and I appreciate that you always try to ground everything by pointing things back to Tolkien and what he would have done. It's why I keep coming back to this podcast, as it's good for all of us to be reminded of that. Now, here's where the criticism comes in. I'm with you that I wish they would have been more faithful to the lore by not adding things or compressing the timeline. I wish that the executives at Amazon had a bit more respect for Tolkien and tried to manage things the way he would have. Sadly, they haven't for the most part. But that doesn't mean I hate the show. Despite its mediocre writing, that doesn't match up with Tolkien or even other fantasy works. We need to remember that Tolkien's writing is a very high bar for them to reach. Even if they did put more time and effort into improving the writing, it is still a very high standard. I think that most of the actors on this show are doing a pretty good job for what they have been given. I've also seen some of them in interviews answering fan questions. You can really tell that a lot of them had done the research and know the source material. J.D. Payne and Patrick McKay are also huge nerds themselves. I've listened to other Tolkien experts who actually got to speak with them personally. They learned that the showrunners did not want to make the show peak bleak and wanted it to feel like Tolkien. Now, executing that vision is another thing entirely, and we all certainly have opinions on that. But at least this proves that the showrunners certainly have good intentions. They would even begin each day in the writer's room with a direct quote from Tolkien's text. So Tolkien was never truly isolated from their discussions. The cinematography is absolutely stunning, and while the music isn't from Howard Shore, I think Bear McCreary has done a great job with his own musical score. I like the music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I got no complaints about the music.
I agree.
Now let me share some of my criticisms about your comments on episode 7 of The Eye. First off, regarding the whole Celeborn controversy, him being mentioned in this episode proves that he wasn't forgotten by the writers. I didn't appreciate your guys' comment about the showrunners receiving so much flack for not mentioning Celeborn sooner that they had to go back and edit that scene. There's no way they would have gone back and shot the same scene with the same actors in a country that is still closed off due to the pandemic, unless it has already been shot during principal photography, which means, contrary to what you said, this was always their plan. Well, let me just address that real quick. First of all, I think we were being a little silly when we said that.
Yeah.
But I don't actually think it's beyond the possibility that they actually went back and edited it either. Now, I don't think they did that, and I have no evidence to think they did. But I think it's possible that they did, right? The reason I think it's possible is because you wouldn't have had to be in New Zealand to film that, right? Just to film that one scene, okay? The second thing is they could have filmed alternate versions of that scene. They could have said to themselves, I wonder how people will react to Celeborn not showing up, right? And had different options. That's also a possibility, right?
Mm-hmm.
But more than anything, you know, fair enough, we were being silly about that. To give them credit, I will give them the credit enough to say that they had a plan for Celeborn all along. I still don't think it's the right plan. But we'll see. We'll see if they bring Celeborn actually into the show at a later point. Meaning actually into the show, not just mentioned off screen. Okay, where was I? Also, I was disappointed that you didn't give the creators any sort of credit for finally mentioning Celeborn. This is something that many of us, myself included, were waiting for them to finally acknowledge. And I know, John, that you've been asking for it. You even did a whole episode on that point. So I was a bit disappointed that you didn't give them any sort of credit. So yeah, I'll give them credit that they mentioned him, but I still think they did not handle the Celeborn thing very well at all in this first season. Let's see. Here are my other thoughts. Yes, I believe the Balrog is Doran's bane. No, I don't think we'll see it fully awake up until later in the show. I agree the Elendil's 180-degree shift on despising Galadriel may have been sudden, and I hope that he changes his mind before the season ends as he is the elf friend. But I'm willing to look past that. The man lost his wife, is estranged from one son, and now he believes that he lost his other son. So this is a question I have sincerely. Is the other son of Elendil, has he actually been mentioned on the show?
Yeah, we talked about this recently. I don't recall him being mentioned. I mean, they've given him a daughter.
Yeah, they've given him the daughter, obviously.
Which is extra canonical, Isildur, but...
And I can't think... Yeah,
it's actually an A.
Yeah, it's Anarion, I think.
I think that's
not. I'm I'm like, that's not, I'm not thinking of Aldarion, am I? Because from Aldarion and Arrendis. But I think it's Anarion, right? Anarion and Isildur, right? I don't think they mentioned Anarion yet. I really hope they don't intend the daughter to be a stand-in for Anarion, right? And so she becomes the character that Anarion would have been otherwise. That I find that annoying, frankly, if that's what they're going to do with that character. But if they alluded to another son that he's estranged from, mm-hmm. it, if they alluded to that at some point, then please correct me on that. Okay, so this was a really, really long note. He mentions a lot of other things, especially the acting that he appreciates. And to be clear, I have no issues with any of the acting. To me, the actors are not the problem with any of this show. I have a problem with some of the casting, but I don't have a problem with the performances of the particular actors. To me, they're doing good work with what they've been given. So, we can agree on the performances. You know, I enjoy them for what they are mm-hmm. and what they've been given, what they have to work with.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on O-Dog's letter here?
No, Greta? I think it was I really do enjoy hearing alternate views. I will own the fact that I've probably been maybe a little bit overly negative in my criticism, simply because it's like I like to be in control of what I watch and how I spend my time. And it was just to the point where I was like angry that I was having to spend an hour and a half of my week watching this show that I didn't even like. So if I was watching it of my own accord, I would probably be a little bit more fair in my criticism.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's just like if we weren't a Tolkien podcast and if this was something that we hadn't decided to talk about, I wouldn't be watching it. Like I would just I'll just be completely outright and say that this, I would not choose to watch this unless I had a reason to, and I have a reason to. So
yeah,
I probably need to be a little bit more, you know, fair and not just mad that I'm wasting my time watching this show. But yeah, it's just not how I would choose to spend my time. So I will own the fact that could probably be a little bit more fair.
Well, I don't know if you need to feel bad that you're not being fair. I think you're coming at it from your perspective, right? And so I think you're trying to be maybe more fair than you should be, right? You're just one person watching the show. I'm just one person watching the show. Yes, we have our perspectives. We have the things that we know, we expect. We have the things that we like.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, we're both watching it because we're both watching it because we do a podcast on Tolkien, and so we mm-hmm. wanted to do reaction right. to this show
and
that's about Tolkien's works,
yeah.
mm-hmm. Adapted from Tolkien's works. But I mean, at this point, I am confident in saying that I have no desire to go back and watch season one again.
No, mm-mm.
I just don't.
No.
That, now, I will watch all the following seasons, too, and I hope it gets better. I really do. But you go back a year ago, and I was very excited for this show. And now I'm just kind of like, oh, well, mm-hmm. that's about where I'm at with it. I'm not going to spend my life being mad about it. But,
it's not worth it.
It's just not worth it. But because what can I do about it, right? Can't do anything. Mm-hmm. But I am going to explain, take the time to explain, my own perspective on it. So I'm not going to feel bad about like having my opinions on it, and people can enjoy it. I do like going back and watching Peter Jackson's films, even the Hobbit ones. Mm-hmm. I like going back and watching the Hobbit films. Those have a lot of detractors, a lot more detractors than the Lord of the Rings adaptations.
I haven't even seen the third Hobbit.
But at the end of the day, I like. Yeah, you did, because we did an episode on it.
Oh,
we did a reaction episode to it.
Oops.
Okay. It's the worst of the three, but but even so, I like. Even though those stories, those adaptations have their flaws, there's something about them that I still like going and watching them and getting immersed in mm-hmm. Middle Earth, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's because of just the Tolkien genius radioactivity, right? Like, you know, it's like his the radioactivity of his mind and his in his perspective is so powerful that even with flaws, it still radiates out, right? Even as I was watching Rings of Power, it was the same kind of deal. It's just a lot less of that radioactivity comes through, and so it doesn't draw me back in quite the same way that those films do, right? So, but if anything, you know, it's the genius of Tolkien that we're all about on this mm-hmm. podcast, mm-hmm. and I don't find it as in abundance with the Rings of Power as I do with the Peter Jackson's films.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think a comment I think that I just kind of, you didn't read this.
Sorry.
Oh, no, you're fine. But basically O-Dog makes the point that, you know, we should keep in mind that this is still just the first season mm-hmm. and, you know, like it's maybe a little too early to cast judgment, which I think I agree with that. I'm interested to see if they've, you know, if the showrunners or Amazon, whoever's in charge, has paid attention to any of the criticisms, and even haven't, whatever. I am interested to see what they do with season two.
Yeah.
Because I know it's true. Like, season ones are rarely the best season of any show. Maybe they're just working. I mean, gosh, I haven't even gone back and listened to our early podcasting episodes. I don't think I want to.
Oh, I don't go back and listen to them, but
I know, but I'm just saying, like, I know we don't do seasons, but, you know, it'll just be interesting to see if, you know, what season two looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And where, you know, if it's more of the same or if they've maybe made some alterations or whatever. And a lot of it, too, is just personal preference. This is so subjective. Like, mm-hmm. it's just really, really subjective. I mean, I love stuff that you can't stand and vice versa. Like, I still haven't watched the Star Wars trilogy, much to my husband's dismay. But I just, you know, it's just not my cup of tea. And I think it's fine for Rings of Power to not be my cup of tea or other people's cup of tea. And I don't mm-hmm. think we really even need to defend our reasons for it. Just be like, nah. No, thanks.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna let you have the final word on that.
It was, yeah.
So I think we're coming up on on the end of this episode. You know, we've gotten to a lot of the feedback. I think we've had some good discussions on our perspectives and others' perspectives. You know, at the end of the day, each person is going to enjoy what they enjoy, and we're not here to rob anybody of that enjoyment. But no. We're going to share our thoughts on why we didn't enjoy it and what we think is wrong with it. So
yeah,
so perilous is a perilous realm if you're a Rings of Power fan.
listen at your own risk.
Yeah. All right. So. Man, there's a lot more feedback that I really was hoping to get to today. I want to end. We'll end with one. I've received this note from Isaiah, and it's I received it a while back and just hadn't responded to it yet. But it's a really nice note. Hello, my name is Isaiah, and I live in Tennessee. I really, really enjoy your podcast. I found out about it when my mom was listening to a church podcast. I'd never really considered listening to podcasts before, but I said that I might as well give it a shot. So I looked up one, and yours was the first I found. All the other ones were more scholarly type ones, and don't get me wrong, those are fine, but I wanted one that felt genuine and realistic. I stumbled upon your podcast, and it started from there. That was back in February of 2022. Now I only have about 40 more episodes to listen to before I'm all caught up. I don't know what I'll do then, but I've been thinking that I don't really want to listen to any others. Yours was the first, and I will listen to it as long as you keep it up.
Nice.
That is a really awesome thing
that's
to say.
Really
thank you,
awesome.
Isaiah.
Yeah, and a fellow Tennessean. That's
absolutely.
Awesome. Yeah.
Absolutely. I thought this was cool. I myself have been trying out some Tolkien-related things. I was first introduced to Tolkien when the Lego Hobbit sets came out for the movies back in 2012. Mm-hmm. They also brought out sets related to the Lord of the Rings films, and I quickly realized that I wanted them all, and I now have all of them. Aside from reading Lord of the Rings for school, I never really thought about anything more about Tolkien for a while, my dark age, if you prefer. But after a while, around 2020, I received the Silmarillion for Christmas. At this time, I was 14 and started reading it. It was nothing like The Lord of the Rings or The Hobbit. It was different, and yet it introduced me to more characters and concepts, and from then on, I became a Tolkien nut. I loved The Silmarillion so much that after I read it for the first time, I started to want more and more. I literally became like to Ungoliant with an unquenchable need to read Tolkien's books. I now own almost 40, and I have a list of wanted books that currently keeps expanding and is a whole piece of paper with front and half of the back filled up. My favorite character in The Silmarillion would be Fingolfin. I admire how persevering he is, even in the midst of his brother Fëanor's misdeeds. I literally almost cried when Morgoth killed Fingolfin, who was still fighting valiantly to the end. This is a really great note. There's a whole lot more, and Isaiah, I'm going to respond to you directly, but just wanted to read that. Really appreciate it, and love hearing from people who are, you know, new listeners and we've never heard from before. So, y'all, there's so much more feedback that whenever we do these episodes, it's like, all right, we got to some, but it's like a small portion of everything. You know, we're reaching the point where we get so much feedback that, unfortunately, I don't think we'll ever have enough time to respond to it all. And
which is kind of awesome.
Well, it is awesome.
I love that our listeners are so engaged.
I do too, but it like kind of hurts me to not be able to respond to it all because people take the time to write to us. So just know that we appreciate everything. Mm-hmm. You know, we read everything. Mm-hmm. And we'll do our best to respond to you somehow and at some point. Just thank you for everybody. Thank you for your feedback, your correspondence, and all that. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm. It really does mean a lot. And know that we're reading it, even if we don't respond.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's about it for this episode.
Oh, all righty, Rudy.
Okay.
Do we know when season 2 is going to drop?
It's not going to be for a while.
Not going to be for a while.
Yeah.
So we'll have plenty of time to talk about other things.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, coming up soon, we're going to be talking about our plans for 2023. I just created a poll, by the way, on our Patreon. So if you're a patron, you get to vote on what our short read in December is going to be. So right now, your options are Smith of Wooten Major, Rover Random, or Farmer Giles of Ham, or something else, which you got to tell us what that something else is.
Have we not done Rover Random?
No, we haven't.
I know I've read it.
Okay.
Are we going to do it?
Huh?
I think we were maybe planning to do it.
Thinking we were going to do it last year, but ran out of time. But anyway, okay. We need your help picking which one of those three we're going to do in December.
So Rover Random, Farmer Giles, and what was the other one?
Smith of Wooten Major. So go over to our Patreon page, and you can vote over there. And if you're not already a patron, you just have to become a patron, and then you can vote. So perks of being
That's
a patron.
That's fun. And we're going to like go by the results of that poll? We're not going to pull rank?
Yeah. I mean, those three are all three options. So
okay. Cool.
It'll be one of those three unless somebody says something else and everybody votes for that one. So
is there a write-in option?
Yeah, there's a write-in option.
Oh, so that always makes things a little more exciting.
Yeah.
Cool. All right.
All right, y'all. Well, thanks to our amazing patrons, especially the following: John R.
Caitlin of Tea with Tolkien.
Jacob Lockham.
John H.
Scotchy Bobo.
Eru 27. Eru 27.
Ms. Anonymous.
Andrew T.
Red Hawk.
Shannon S.
Brian O.
Emilio P.
Zeke F.
James A.
James L.
Chris L.
Chuck F.
Azia V.
Ish of the Hammer.
Teresa C.
David of Pints with Jack.
Jonathan D.
Eric B.
Johanna T.
Mike M.
Robert H.
Paul D.
Julia.
Werty.
Matthew W.
Joe Bagelman.
Chris K.
Jacob S.
Richard K.
Matt R.
Garrett P.
John W.
And Eugene D.
As well as those celebrating their Patreon anniversary in November of 2022, Michael L.
And Matthew F.
Thank you all.
Yes, thank you guys.
Really appreciate you and all of our patrons. Mm-hmm. And thanks everybody for listening and or watching. We will talk at you next time.
Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye.